and welcome to episode 15. 15? Did I get it this time?
14, I think.
Is it wild 14?
No.
I got so excited. I was like, I finally got this one. I'm prepared this week.
I want to be on your side, but it is right in front of me that this is episode 14.
Oh, wow.
But that's okay.
I literally can never win.
It's because that's Wild fine. Came out in 2014.
Yeah.
Exactly, Joshua. I'm just that smart.
Mm-hmm.
Mental health update, everyone. How are you doing?
I'm Landon.
I'm Joshua.
Oh, wait, I forgot. I'm Andrea. I'm mentally unstable. I'm drinking wine from the bottle for this episode.
Oh, my God.
Should I do like a glugging sound, or do you want to input one?
I'm not going to, so make whatever sound you want.
I'm just kidding. Here's me closing it. ASMR. Ooh!
But you deserve that though, because you're working full days now.
Like barely. Yeah. That doesn't really count.
You're like an adult.
No, Joshua's still the adult.
True.
It's not me.
I was going to ask Josh about his job.
We haven't talked about that yet.
Josh,
really
are there any updates about your job?
Tell us right now.
I did have an interview.
Uh-huh.
For those of you who didn't listen to the last episode, what's the 5-second summary of this?
It's a writing position for adult films.
Very eloquently put, Joshua. Perfect. That is not what I would have said.
I sent Andrea my writing samples, and I...
Oh, Landon saw it.
Oh.
Yeah.
He loved it. I read through them. You guys, yeah, maybe I'll post it as an outtake. I don't know. I don't know. Maybe I'll transcribe it. But verbally, like, what's that called?
An audiobook?
Audible. Oh my God, we have to hop on that.
This is such a strange opening to the film we watched. Don't you think?
Absolutely.
I think it fits perfectly.
Zero like correlation to what we're gonna talk about today.
Yes.
We're just having fun, you guys. This is new.
Yeah. It's very important to have fun in these times where we may not make it to the end of the calendar year. Did you guys hear about this new coronavirus?
What?
There's a second one?
Oh my God.
I honestly welcome it.
What do we do?
I want to fucking die. I really do.
Oh,
I'm not in any position of power. I'm not a legislator. I'm not a doctor. But I feel so helpless.
You know what I am?
I don't know what to do.
A barb for Bernie! 2 weeks in a row!
Yes. That's what needs to happen. What if Bernie, tweets... You know how, like Beyonce or something will, delete all her Instagram posts?
Yeah, yes!
What if he, deletes all his posts? And then it's like, Bernie is coming.
I literally would fucking... I don't even think...
And he revokes his concession.
Have you guys seen Ready or
that
Not?
That would be history.
No.
The movie? I was going to say the Taylor Swift song. No, I have not seen the film.
Never mind.
Okay.
For those of you who have watched Ready or Not, I would have been the husband at the end of the movie. That's no one's
do,
seen
do
that
a quick review
movie.
Of the movie. Every time we mention a movie, we should do a quick one sentence review and
okay.
a rating.
It was fun. I love women. I hate rich people. Eat the rich. Abolish the police. Also, yeah, Breonna Taylor's killers are still free. So y'all need to fucking get on that. Sign the petitions. Donate what you can. I'm so fucking tired of stupid fucking idiots not realizing that we have not only a fucking health pandemic, but a racial pandemic in this country and across the world. But more importantly, we have to focus on local issues and then we can expand. So fucking contact your legislators and we need to do what we can, either as an ally or as a person of color. You need to fucking use your voice and unite, and it's gonna be hard, but we can do it.
That was your review of the 2019 film, Ready or Not.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Several points were made. Thank you for saying it was. That. And Andrea has an abolish the police
yes, Zoom background. Yes, I do. Right this now. Is bare minimum representation, by the way. We need to do more.
Well, in the context of Zoom podcast, that's like top tier activism.
You guys.
But yes.
I don't know what I'm going to do with my life anymore. Other than this podcast, I think we need to, like, I don't know what, but we need to, like, get on the map because, oh my God, you guys, we have to tell them.
Are you okay?
Did no.
something happen?
I'm just, like, really intellectual today. Okay. Listen, like, you know how we only access, like, 20%? Right now, I'm accessing, like, 100.
What? Oh, of your brain? Oh my God, you're like Lucy, yes. Scarlett Johansson. Do you remember that movie?
I've never seen
I remember
it.
That movie
but the whole premise is that she could. Unlock okay, 100% like, of her brain.
I'm like...
But I think she could just kill people at will. I think that was the majority of the movie. Was her just killing people.
Oh, I wish
people.
I could do that, honey. I literally wish I could kill people at will. That would be very fun. We have to tell the listeners. And we have to call out listeners. We have someone listening from the Jackson Air Force Base?
Travis Air Force Base.
Travis
in Air Force sunny Base. California.
So if you are listening in terms of like you're part of the revolution and you're working for the Inside Out, hi.
Just make yourself
if you're
known to
me,
us. Because we have the listener data. And we peruse it from time to time. And it's just a curiosity thing for me.
If you're a friend.
Yeah.
Hello.
And also,
if you're a foe, don't come for me.
The numbers make it either we have one listener at Travis Air Force Base who is listening often to multiple episodes, which is great, or we have multiple people at the Air Force Base each listening to the podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know which is more confounding to me.
We say hello to you.
What if they play it on the speaker?
Yeah, can you imagine, like, they're, like, in the mess hall, and they're like, did you listen to the new episode? At, like, an Air Force base?
I'm sorry to tell you guys at the Air Force base that we are anti-military yet. Nepotism can be good, but...
Yeah, unless you want to hit our Patreon.
Yeah.
With government money.
No, I'm kidding. I will not stoop to that level.
I will not be bought off by special interests.
Exactly.
AKA but, the U.S. military.
Uh-huh. There's so many things I want to talk about, and none of them pertain to this fucking podcast.
I feel like we keep getting 3/4 of the way through a thought before moving to another. I don't know where to go.
Back to my thing. So... Okay.
We're gonna record for an hour and a half, and there's gonna be an hour and 15-minute outtake on the Instagram. And then there's gonna be 15 minutes of us being like, certain women
exactly.
Kelly Reichardt.
They are women.
Grass trains.
Lesbianism.
Kristen Stewart is straight.
Sorry. Also, you guys, we're in the epicenter of this fucking pandemic.
Yeah.
Because people in Florida have fucking
people
want to
go to Universal Studios so fucking bad. Here's a thought. It's not that great. And it's always going to be there.
I mean, no, it is great. But it is going
to
be there.
That's a corporation. Find a story and stick to it.
Why do you think I haven't gone?
True.
Since January.
It has nothing to do with the pandemic. Yes. We're all going to die.
There is no
Florida,
consumption
every single
in
day, Florida is reaching a record for the amount of cases.
What was it today? Like 10,000?
Yeah. Like this.
Yeah.
Nowhere guys, in the country 10,000. At any point in time no. had there been
the
these
world.
Numbers. I don't know about
the,
world.
World.
I haven't fact
I know.
Checked
I'm
that.
Saying.
Really? More than China when it started?
I don't know. I'm
yeah.
just saying right now, in the present tense, nobody has these numbers except for us.
Yeah.
There's not even that many people in Florida.
I think
like,
that we
is,
need to...
Like,
I'm not understanding the militance with which we were prepared to fight this pandemic.
Well, not
has
we.
Diminished, but like, I feel like there was a time where everyone, begrudgingly or not, was like, we have to stay inside and we mm-hmm. have to, like, where our entire life is going to be disrupted. And right. that mm-hmm. attitude is gone from, like, a majority answer. Of people.
I have your answer.
What?
It is the fact that since our government doesn't give a shit about its people, only its businessmen, they have begun to open businesses because they're greedy and they need to, like, funnel in more money from taxpayers and not give them stimulus checks and not fucking give them the correct unemployment benefits that they should be, have the right to. So stay with me.
Okay.
Because of that, and because a business is opening up, because they need to make money, and because money makes the world go round, blah, blah, blah. That's why people are like, oh, I can go to Olive Garden and right. have unlimited breadsticks in the dining room. Coronavirus is fake. No, bitch. But stay home. Make your fucking pasta taste the same in your fucking kitchen. Go to hell. Put on your fucking mask. Shut the fuck up. Jesus, I'm so mad.
It's two issues that I think are at least somewhat distinctly American. It's that, one, the government knows best. The government knows better than doctors. The government knows better uh-huh. than economists. The government knows uh-huh. better than any trained professional. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then it's the fact that just because Olive Garden down the street opens, that we have to go. Mm-hmm.
Thank you,
know?
You for using my analogy and keeping that going.
Just, like, constant, like,
yeah,
the constant need for stimulus. Like, yeah, it's
so let's create a pandemic.
What? That create a pandemic.
The Travis Air Force Base people are on their way.
She said genocide.
I'm kidding.
You're
I'm kidding,
on a list, bitch.
I'm totally joking for legal reasons.
We don't even have a lawyer.
I
we
have
say
a lawyer.
That all the time.
So, starting women 2016.
Welcome to Nepotism Can Be Good, you guys.
Finally, we're back on track. How long have you guys? We've been talking for 40 minutes.
I believe it.
Quite literally 40 minutes. Baby, I feel so bad for you having to edit this.
Here's a good thing, though. This film is, well, I guess we should introduce it first.
So, this week, we are talking about, honestly, I don't even know if we should use weeks this time anymore because we post very infrequently.
Very true.
Sorry, you guys. We have a quarantine brain. Yeah. So, we're talking Certain Women 2016. Don't fact check
yes.
me, but I think
yes.
so. listen, this is an indie. This is a $2 million film. That's pretty indie.
Ooh.
For a cast like this.
But also, I feel like if you film in Montana, they pay you, you know, because it's so, like.
Well, thanks for spoiling. It's set in Montana.
Okay, I mean, yeah.
It premiered at Sundance in January of 2016. It was directed, written, and edited by Kelly Reichardt.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, you guys, pronunciation is a problem. And then it's, the movie itself is based off of three short stories written by author Mel Malloy.
Sure.
If your name yeah. isn't Mail, which it's probably not. It's spelled M-A-I-L-E. Maile.
Maile Malloy.
Maile Malloy?
Maile Malloy, if you or any of your associates are listening to the podcast, feel free to write us in with a voice memo of how to pronounce
yes.
the name. And we will correct
and dub
next
this.
Week.
Oh.
Or we can dub
works.
It.
Dub
either
it.
One.
Actually, if anyone's either listening one. Wants to send us voice recordings, we'll put them in. Doesn't matter what you say.
We should start. The thing is, I'm like, we should start a section for that, but no one will send us.
Exactly.
Anyways. The three stories that were adapted for this film are called Travis B, Native Sandstone, and Tome. And those are part of her two collections called Both Ways is the Only Way I Want It and Half in Love.
Can we take a second to truly appreciate the form of the short story? What a beautiful.
We already did this!
But it's like the predecessor of a Quibi.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, God.
Oh, wait, like the app?
Yes. It's like someone at one point was like, novels are so long, right, you guys? Short stories are a little more digestible.
Don't mock me.
I'm not mocking you. I'm the same way. I couldn't read a book, but I can read a short story any day.
Well, what do we read when we can't read short stories?
Poetry?
Instagram posts about changing systemic racism.
Yeah.
Okay. So, if you are familiar with Kelly Reichardt, fuck.
Sure.
Can I just say Kelly?
Yeah. It's German.
If you're...
I think.
I'm not.
Reichardt?
If you're familiar with Kelly...
is that problematic? Has, like, the heart of the Reich? Oh.
I don't know what a Reich is.
Like, the Third Reich?
Third Reich?
What is that?
The Nazis?
I try not to think about that.
But you should be aware of the Nazis.
You should know what the Third Reich is.
I'm going to cut that out. I'm sorry for dissing Kelly Reichardt. I'm sure
she's not a Nazi. That's probably my ancestral Jew trauma. You don't think?
I have no idea.
You don't think my ancestors were like, I want to repress that, so then, no, I don't know.
I abstain from commenting.
Okay, I'm sorry. I already said that I'm not smart.
Don't apologize.
I'm just passionate.
I'm cutting this whole thing out.
Okay. Anyways, Kelly has a couple of other films on her belt by the time she's done this, but this is her, like, most popular movie. Like, this is her first movie to ever gross more than $1 million. They really? Hit 1.5. Yes.
Oh.
They hit 1.5, so they didn't even make budget. But
yeah, I think that at the time this movie came out, she was something of like a celebrity in the indie film circuit.
Yeah, I think she still is.
Yeah,
right?
She has First Cow.
First Cow is coming out on digital on July 10th, you guys.
Is it really?
Yes, A24 just announced it today.
I love that. Can't wait to cry.
Well, so some of her predecessor films include Old Joy from 2006 and one that we know on the podcast, Wendy and Lucy.
Wendy and Lucy.
Wendy and Lucy.
Highly recommend.
She also has a film called Meek's Cutoff from 2010. And those last two that I just mentioned, Michelle Williams was also involved in, as well as the one we're talking about today. So they seem to have some sort of like working relationship, which is cute.
I think just last week I set aside time to appreciate Michelle Williams, no?
Yeah. You want to do it again?
Yeah.
In case she's listening?
Michelle Williams, I am so sorry that Hollywood has failed you and that you have not been given the attention you deserve. I think you're a fantastic actress. I think that you're one of the greats.
Yeah. I concur.
Well, I don't, and I will open this court.
What?
I will open up the discussion to talk about the truly robbed queen of Hollywood, Miss Amy Adams.
I'm not saying just because I'm giving Michelle Williams a spotlight doesn't mean I'm taking it away from Amy Adams. Although I will say, do you not think that Amy Adams has more exposure than Michelle Williams does?
Absolutely not.
I think she does. What? I think Amy Adams is... at least a little bit more high profile than Michelle Williams is.
She definitely is.
Yeah.
I agree with Landon.
Shut up.
Sorry.
Michelle Williams. Every time I watch Michelle Williams' performance, I'm like, it's so understated, but it's so powerful.
Ugh. She was in Cabaret.
I don't know about that.
I've not seen Cabaret.
I was recently followed by a sugar daddy as well as the Nepotism Can Be Good Instagram account. So if sugar daddy is listening, I'm not interested.
You can't have Michelle. This is exactly what I'm talking about. She can't have 5 minutes of her own time. And
she
that's
got a
what
whole
she deserves.
Movie.
But nobody sees them. That's the problem.
You watch them.
I know, but I want the public to be watching them.
I just, like, don't feel right
Venom.
About spending 5 minutes to talk about some, like,
see,
blonde white
this
lady.
Is what I mean. She gets a blockbuster movie and it ends up being Venom.
Well, that's her fault. Who would sign on to that? So this film, in addition to Old Joy and Wendy and Lucy, are dedicated to Kelly's dog, Lucy, which is very cute. Mm. I would like to dedicate this podcast to my cat, Toby.
Are there any dogs in the... Well, there's the one dog, the corgi.
But no, there's also Laura Dern's dog. Are you fucking kidding?
Oh, yeah, that she has a big dog.
Her cute big dog that she takes to work.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. I'm just... Because Wendy and Lucy is, like, about a dog. Like, no mistake yeah. about it. It's about a dog. Yeah. But I'm glad to see she's expanding. But she's still featuring the dogs. I fell in love with that corgi. I thought he was fantastic.
We'll get into that.
Okay.
I have some thoughts about the corgi. It didn't wrong me. It didn't wrong me. I was just worried. Okay. The film is part of the Criterion Collection. Hmm. The main actresses for this film are, and the only people I will be talking about in this film by name are Laura Dern, Michelle Williams, and a little known actress, Lily Gladstone, who is native to Montana, and she is of Blackfeet and, excuse my pronunciation, I don't know if this is correct, Nez Perce ancestry.
No idea.
She steals the show.
I don't know.
This is her first film, though.
Yes. But she has collaborated with Kelly Reichardt. Reichardt.
Since?
Oh my god. Since.
Oh.
She's in First Cow,
I think. Yeah, I think she's in First Cow.
Lily. and Kristen Stewart, but she's
oh, yeah, yeah.
not officially one of the certain women, but she's in the film.
Yeah. So when I was doing my research for this week, I was trying so hard to find Laura Dern stuff, but everyone wouldn't stop talking about Kristen Stewart, which I understand. Like, we all want to fuck her, whether or not we want to say it out loud. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm here for Laura Dern. I have a whole podcast about Laura Dern. I would like to know what people thought about Laura Dern. We don't have much.
Okay.
I will say that right now. I say that every time I do the research, so clearly the denominator is me. But this is a $2 million film. What do you expect from me?
Right.
I don't know.
You should have seen the research for We Don't Live Here Anymore. That was horrendous.
I can imagine.
What was the budget for that again?
It was $3 million.
They had more money.
That's true.
I will say that Laura Dern and Kristen Stewart did two press videos that I could find. One was on the Today Show with Kathy Lee and Hoda, and the other one was at a press tour.
Can you imagine Kathy Lee and Hoda watching this film together?
No, they're so fucking annoying in the interview. They're like, oh, it's about, like, women.
Yeah.
They're not wrong. Certain.
Kathy Lee and Hoda, maybe stay away from film criticism. It might not be your thing.
They, at one point, who's who? Which one's Kathy Lee? The white one, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Kathy Lee was like, Kelly Reichardt has a foot fetish.
Sorry.
What?
She was like,
did Laura Dern answer? Is that a question?
Kristen Stewart just stared at her like, what the fuck? And then Hoda made a joke like, oh, it'll get people to buy tickets. And then Kristen was like, please go see this movie. So that is all I have to preface, I think. Let me double check. Oh, both Kristen Stewart and Laura Dern hopped on the project specifically because they wanted to work with Kelly. So.
Interesting.
That's cute. So we'll get into it. Someone has to talk about the plot for me because I feel like I've talked too much.
Okay. Well, because like we said, how the film is based on three short stories. The film is told in three distinct vignettes that pretty much for the most part don't connect, although they do connect, I found, in some very interesting ways. Mm-hmm. Laura Dern's like half hour or so is first, and then we get Michelle Williams, and then we get Lily Gladstone and Kristen Stewart. So I don't know if we want to go through Laura Dern's in detail and then just kind of give a summary of the other ones.
First of all, let's rank. What was your favorite, then middle, and then least favorite vignette?
My favorite was Lily Gladstone.
Okay. I said rank.
But like...
Josh is like my favorite. Say the whole thing.
Oh. And then Laura Dern, Michelle Williams.
Michelle last.
Yeah. But I really... Okay. I liked all of them.
Okay. I'm gonna say... Michelle Williams, definitely my least favorite. Not just because it was her, but because...
What do you have against Michelle? Can we hash this out now? You're like, no, I don't want to support like a white woman, but we have a podcast about Laura Dern. That's not a hill you can die on. Listen to what I'm
saying. Oh my God, I don't have anything against Michelle Williams. I don't like her part because I hate her stupid fucking husband. And I hate that she's like badgering this poor man for his stupid stone. I didn't like it. It gave me like colonial woman and I, not colonial, colonist woman. And I didn't like it. Okay. Even though he was white. She wasn't a colonist. Okay. But I just like, she was just so like, I don't know. I was like scared. She like gave me goosebumps in bad ways, like bad mojo. But also I fucking hate her stupid husband that was like, your mom is like, she's like been through a lot. Like, shut up. She's been through a lot because she's married to you. Jesus. Anyways, second in the middle, I will have to say was Lily because I don't like farms. I mean, like, I like farms, but I just, like, I don't know. I don't, like, sympathize with the whole horse thing. I think I have some unresolved horse trauma from my past life. And then the top for me has to be Laura Dern because she had a cute dog and I love her. But I will say I was most impressed with Lily's performance.
Me too.
Okay.
How about you, Lennon? Rank.
I want to say each one offered something different for me. Because Laura Dern's mm-hmm. is the most, like, whole plot-wise, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, it's pretty much the only one that has, like, a beginning, middle, and end. I thought that... I'm going to say Michelle Williams, I thought that she had, like, the most subtle performance in a good way. But I think that Lily and Kristen's was the most emotional. And yeah. that's the one that got to me the most. But okay. I don't know if I could rank them because they're all so different in that way.
Boom! Anyways.
Okay. I don't know.
You bring up some very good points that we are about to go through. So let's go through all of them. But, like, we don't have to get into crazy detail, I think. Okay. This movie itself is really subtle. So, like, I feel like even if we got to the nitty-gritty, like, we wouldn't be saying anything. Laura Dern's vignette is first.
Laura Dern is first billed, and I was like,
yes.
Oh, I was, but I think it was just the order in which the actors appear.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, good for her. Because I thought this was, I didn't know about the vignette structure of the film going into it. I thought that it was mm-hmm. a film that primarily featured Michelle Williams because I knew it was a Kelly Reichardt film. But then I knew that Lily Gladstone had a significant role, and I thought Laura Dern was just a supporting character. But it turns out not the case. They're all equally certain women.
Yes. Yes. My first note is Laura Dern titty comeback.
Yeah.
I don't know why I wrote that. Oh, yeah, she's having a...
She's getting dressed after, like, a sexual encounter with this bearded mm-hmm. man. Mm-hmm. Which is important. Yes. But she's a lawyer. And she has a sex life. So she mm-hmm. smashed that stereotype. Good for her. She works in a law office. Again, like we said, all these stories take place in Montana. It's mm-hmm. unclear of if they're in relatively the same area. But all Montana. And they... I guess they're all supposed to be, like, different, like, pockets of Montana. Like, Laura Dern's, like, urban. Whereas Lily Gladstone is, like, farm, and then Michelle Williams is somewhere in the middle, but because of how bland Montana is, there's really not that much of a distinction. It looks beautiful though. I would love to go. I could not live there.
Absolutely not. The good thing about Laura's vignette is that her character is also named Laura, so we won't have a problem this week with names.
I thought that was going to carry through for the rest of them, but it didn't. But that's okay. No. Take what you can get.
So she's a lawyer, and the main plot point of her storyline is that she has this disgruntled client mm-hmm. named, is it Robert Fuller? I have Fuller. His last name is
definitely Fuller.
And he's a disgruntled client who she's been working for 8 months straight and has been giving him the like same consistent legal advice. Politics on the brain. Legal advice about a work accident that left him with a permanent I think it's like a visual disability, right?
I think it's like a brain injury,
yeah,
that causes him to like, because I think he says that he has trouble walking sometimes, and then yeah, he can't, like his vision's blurry all the time.
Okay,
also he's played by Jared Harris from Chernobyl.
That was a fun just surprise. Wanted
to slide that in because I love Chernobyl and I like to bring it up all in right. conversations.
Well, now you have to do the rating, the one
Chernobyl review. Listen to doctors, listen to people who have a degree in the field that is of issue at the moment, something that we could all learn from today. I think that Chernobyl resonates very well with this current crisis. 5 out of 5 stars. I think it's incredible. I think everyone should watch it. It's only a few hours. It's a miniseries on HBO. Yeah, that's it.
Okay, period.
Great.
Jared Harris is not Russian. He looks so Russian, and that's the first thing I'd seen him in was Chernobyl, but he has a fantastic American accent. I don't know if he's actually American. He has a fantastic Russian accent.
If only there was a website where you could like type someone's name and then like immediately know their nationality.
You could type in Hoda Kotb and find out that she's Egyptian. She's
Egyptian. So the legal advice that she's given Fuller is that he cannot continue to sue whoever was responsible for the negligence that led to his disability because he accepted settlement money from that person prior to her representing him legally. And so after him badgering her for 8 months straight about like what's the next step and what can we do and all this stuff, she tells him we're gonna get a second opinion. They go to a man and the man agrees with her and tells him the same thing, and suddenly Fuller has a revelation that really it is the end of the road for him, yeah, in terms of getting more money from these people.
He believes the man almost immediately.
Literally.
Exactly.
Literally. We learn that he just has like really weird boundary issues and like is inserting
he's constantly into asking Laura for a coffee date. He's like, yeah, maybe we can get coffee and strategize about our legal plan, yeah, which I respect the hustle because I would also like to get coffee with Laura Dern. But after 8 months, give it a rest. Yeah. She's not interested.
Yeah. And so it becomes apparent that he's also like trying to like find someone to like take him places and do things with because he can't see, he can't drive his own car. He has a bad relationship with his wife, so she's not going to drive him around everywhere. So then he starts inserting himself into Laura Dern's life, her character's life, because I guess she's the only person available to him. But he still doesn't respect her because she's a woman. Subtly, it's not like explicitly said, but obviously he does, mm-hmm, not respect her, mm-hmm, because of the way that he crosses the boundaries with her. He at one point enters her car.
This, and I want to stop you before you get into that because this is something I think is very, okay, important. She's driving in her car alone and then her phone rings and she pulls over into a parking lot and parks her car and then answers the phone, which I thought was so funny. Because I've never seen that happen in real life. But I like to think that Laura Dern does that every time just to be extra safe. And while she's stopped and on the phone, she's on the phone with this guy. And I didn't really understand their conversation, but I just wrote that he said, quote, he has his hands full. So I don't know if we have any idea who, mm-hmm, she was talking to. But then her client sees her in that parking lot and gets into her car.
Mm-hmm. So she starts driving him, I guess, home. And he starts saying that he wants to shoot people with a machine gun out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And obviously she's like, don't say things like that. I'm going to leave you on the side of the road, motherfucker. I mean, she doesn't say that, but like,
she's too nice. She should have left his ass on the side of the road. But she's like, hey, yeah, stop. Don't say that. And then she just kept psycho driving.
Yeah. She's not psycho.
And then he starts sobbing in the passenger seat.
Yeah, she plays a song and then he sobs.
Yeah.
And then baby's sleeping and the pigs call. The pigs are the cops, right, by the way. And they call her and they're like, you have to come here. And it's just like, we're all sitting here like, what the hell? I thought that it was a suicide.
Uh-huh.
That was my initial thought. But no, of course not. Fuller is full psychosis, has taken a man that they refer to as Big Man hostage. His real name is Amatuana.
And he's Samoan royalty.
He sure he's
Samoan
is.
He's very like
12th in line to be the king of Samoa, which I didn't know they had a king because I thought they were in American territory.
I don't know.
But good for Big Man. I thought he was great.
I think I have a thing with the number 14.
It was 12, wasn't it?
Yeah, I know, but I said 14. Oh.
Maybe that's your
number. What's going
on? I don't know.
I don't know.
But yeah, 2 weeks in a row.
Whew! All right, so he's holding...
No, I was... Like, when she got the phone call, because this came immediately after the machine gun thing, I thought he had, like, committed a mass shooting.
Oh, me too.
So, in relation to that, this is much better. Because nobody's hurt as of yet.
Yeah.
He just has Big Man hostage.
So she arrives to the building where the hostage situation is taking place. I think it's a police building, right? Or like some sort of government building.
Yeah, because it's like an archive building.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she gets there and the main cop is like literally like gaslighting her to enter this hostage situation and put herself at risk. But he's saying it and he's acting like it's really not a big deal for her to go in there and like fucking like be with a hostage. Are you fucking kidding?
They give her a bulletproof vest though.
Yeah.
And they kind of like coach her on what to do. They're like, make him feel like you're on his side and just blame the system if you can't do anything else. That's as much coaching as she gets. And then they put a bulletproof vest on her and then send her in.
Yeah.
Scary.
Which is very believable
frightening
to me. So since he has that visual impairment, he wants her to read like deposition statements made about him during their settlement.
Yeah, it's some file that's in the building and she has to go fetch it and then she brings it to him and starts reading it.
So I guess it's like court archives or something.
Maybe.
And so he's still like, he's constantly just like craving this justice for what happened to him, even though like there's really nothing that she can do. And so he ends up letting Amatuana go. And he tells Laura that he's going to sneak out the back to pretend.
Well, in the statements, she
she
reads the statements, like the files in the folder, just one after the other. And it's all these people from his work saying that he was at fault for the accident, that he smelled of alcohol on the job that day. And so she's just reading these statements. And then she reads one that says, this client isn't like entitled to any compensation from his employer, he was at fault, blah, 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 blah. And then she gets to the end and it turns out that was her statement and it hurts his feelings, I think. But she just says like, yes, I testified against you, I've told you for 8 months that you're in the wrong about this, you should give yourself up to the police and you should go to therapy and you should be nice to your wife. And that's her advice, which I think is great. But yeah, then he lets Big Man go and he says he's going to sneak out the back. And this whole time she's like pleading with him, like, please give yourself up to the police. It'll be so much easier that way and no one's going to get hurt. But alas.
He doesn't listen.
Shocker! Men never listen. So he tells her, I'm going to escape through the back and you're going to pretend like I'm holding you at gunpoint in the front while I get away. So she walks up to the front and immediately she's like, he's left through the back. They go grab him. Yada, yada. Vignette pretty much over there.
Yeah.
We
I said, she rats him out. Good job, Laura. You should be chief of police.
Well, she would never.
But like the efficiency with which she caught that criminal, the actual police system could never.
Yeah.
She had him and then he was in handcuffs in the back of the car in 2 minutes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Good for her.
So next up we have Michelle Williams. I'll let you say this part so that I don't infringe her.
I don't need you...
With my bias.
I don't need you to like her character or even this vignette. I just need you to acknowledge that she's a good actress.
I haven't seen anything.
Okay, that's fair.
Watch Manchester by the Sea.
You really should watch Wendy and Lucy.
No, I've seen Wendy and Lucy and I liked it.
Oh.
I liked Wendy and Lucy more than this.
Okay.
I think Josh and I saw it in English class.
We did.
That's an interesting movie to show in English class.
He was a legend.
We had a communist teacher. It's fine.
Before we get into the Michelle Williams thing, I just need everyone to agree that Michelle Williams is a good actress.
I agree.
You can't even say she's a good actress?
I've only seen two of her movies, and I liked
Wendy and Lucy. Watching Wendy and Lucy is enough for me to say she's an astronomically fantastic actress. I just need you to tell me she's a good actress.
Okay.
That's number one. Number two is I want to talk about when she was nominated for an Emmy last year for that miniseries or whatever. And then Michelle Williams.
You don't seem like a really big Michelle Williams fan if you say that miniseries or whatever.
Fossey well, I'm not going to watch it. It's, I don't care. It's about like theater kids, I think.
Ew.
But
the only theater kids allowed are Barry.
She got nominated for an Emmy. And then Michelle Williams, same name. Did she win?
She won, okay. Yeah.
Then she won the Emmy. And then Michelle Williams with the same name, singer from Destiny's Child, the third, Beyonce, Kelly Rowland, Michelle Williams. She goes on Instagram Live and she says, "Stop congratulating me about this Emmy. I am black."
I remember you telling me this story.
Michelle Williams is white. I am black. I did not win an Emmy. And I think it's so funny because, first of all, who's following Michelle Williams? Like, no offense, but, like, what is she doing right now? But, oh my God, that's the funniest thing
in the
world.
Who's following Michelle Williams, the Destiny's Child person, who is also watching a very niche Michelle Williams miniseries?
Right.
And then how could you confuse them?
That's my introduction to Michelle Williams. I think she's fantastic. Anyway, I think that the sections were pretty evenly divided into half hours, you know?
Yeah.
Because the movie's like 90 minutes, and then I think it's pretty evenly divided.
107.
Yeah. So we have a new vignette. It starts with Michelle Williams just walking in the woods in, like, a full runner's outfit, which I was like, okay, that's interesting. She's walking in the woods. She walks up to this campsite, and this girl, who turns out to be her daughter, is just completely dismissive of her. And I'm like, okay, bitch. She's also on her phone, like, while they're camping, and I'm like, that's kind of the point, is to not be on your phones, but, and also, how, like, I wouldn't even think that they would get cell service, like, in a town in Montana, but she has cell service, like, all the way out in the boonies. Anyway, her daughter's a bitch, her husband, she gets to her campsite, and she goes in the tent, and her husband is there, who... I'm 90% sure is the same bearded guy that Laura Dern was having sex with at the very beginning.
I think so. Okay. I think so as well.
Okay. So that's one of the ties between the stories, but that doesn't come back. It's just something that I noticed. Her husband is there. He's also terrible to her. You can immediately tell this marriage is completely loveless. This family is completely loveless. And...
Yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah. But, yeah, like Andrea said earlier, she's outside, like, putting stuff away, and then the dad takes the daughter into the car, and he's like, "Can you try to be nice to mom, please? She does a lot of stuff." And I'm like, okay, and dad of the year, like... fuck you. Also, this is just a minor, I can say this because the daughter's a cunt, her name is Guthrie. What a terrible name.
What a horrible
And you're
name.
Kind of...
Well, you have to blame Michelle and...
You're kind of cursing your daughter with a name like that, right? To be a cunt? If any of our listeners are named Guthrie.
I mean, I'm a cunt and my name is Andrea, so...
But the main plot of this story is Michelle Williams and her husband are building a house. Well, in this conversation in the car with his daughter, he says, "I'm building her a house," as to diminish the team quality of it. But I don't think that's the case. I think he's just delusional and 100%. Refuses to give a woman credit. But they're camping. It's, I think it's a Sunday, and the daughter's like, can we go back home? I want to, like, go on AOL Messenger or whatever she wants to do. So fucking bad. And she's like, no, we have to make one more stop. We have to go see Albert. And I'm like, okay, who's Albert? And they drive to this house, and mom and dad get out of the car and go to this, like, pile of rocks, this pile of sandstone rocks. And I'm like, is that Albert? I thought that...
Oh, I thought it was his grave. Yeah,
I was like, is Albert the rocks? And then, yeah, I was like, oh, maybe it's a grave. But it turns out it's just this big pile of sandstone rocks. It's next to this house. And there's a man in the house, an old man, and his name is Albert. So he's not a pile of rocks. But that no. kept me entertained for at least a few minutes. He's just this old, senile, confused man. He talks about how he keeps falling and banging his head and, like, hallucinating that people are in his house visiting him. And it's very sad because mm-hmm. he says all these things with such confidence and such a calm demeanor. But Michelle Williams quickly gets to the point. She says, I want to buy all these sandstone rocks that you have in your... The relationship between the two of them is unclear, I think.
It's kind of strange.
But they're not family.
No.
But just an elderly friend, which I guess is a normal thing to have. She says, I want the sandstone. Can I have it? And Albert's like, oh, you know, it used to be a schoolhouse. It was like the first schoolhouse in Montana or whatever he says. And mm-hmm. she's like, yeah, that's super cool. I want my house to be authentic. I want to have local materials when I build a house. And he's an old ass Montana man. He doesn't care about sustainable building or whatever. But he like sort of agrees. He's like, I agree, but I like might change my mind. I'll let you know about it.
And he's like, I agree, but I like this pile of rocks doing nothing in front of my house.
Right. And so husband and wife leave their cards with Albert and they take off. They see a quail in the yard, which is a nice, serene moment. You just get to watch a quail running around for like a minute or so.
I didn't know what that looked like till we saw this movie.
Me neither.
Oh.
Look at that.
And then in like a throwaway line, we learn that Gina is Michelle Williams' character. She and her husband work together and she's the boss of their company.
Yep.
Yeah. But she's not treated like the boss, and it made me very angry because her husband doesn't respect her. Anyway,
they never do.
Come back, I think, a week later with this guy who has a flatbed truck, and they start loading the rocks onto the truck. So the implication is that Albert has given his permission, but as they're loading the rocks, Michelle Williams looks into the house and sees Albert. And she waves at him, but then he just walks away. And that's the end of their vignette. So, not a lot of closure in terms of plot, but I think it was maybe allegorical of like natural resource use and taking it from the places it originated.
I'm not gonna lie.
I don't think that they made a ton of points with it, but I thought it was nice. I thought it was serene, watching that quail run around.
It was also men not listening to women again. Yeah.
What else is new?
I mean, that's not serene to me, but
a common thread through all of these
familiar
stories, and I think that was intentional for that to be highlighted.
I think it would be cute. If, Josh, you take the third vignette. God.
I didn't take any notes.
Oh, baby, we're so insane. So I'm going to
need some help with this.
Okay.
But.
Oh, I'll send you mine. They're going to be super unhelpful.
Okay.
I see other bitch is a horse girl, so do with that what you will. My first note is mommy incoming. I said, mommy incoming. She's a commie teacher, an educational law teacher. I think farmer girl interrupts her session.
Okay. So we start with her in the farm, I think, right? And yes. She's just like feeding the horses and like letting them out.
This is also very calming to watch. I thought it was fantastic.
We're talking about Lily now.
Oh, yes. We're on Lily Gladstone.
I don't know if she ever gets a name. Do we remember?
Jamie.
Oh, nice job.
So she just takes care of the horses for like a solid 5 minutes, I think.
Yeah.
And then she goes to a parking lot at a school?
She's following
I think she's just driving around aimlessly. And then she gets to this parking lot.
She sees people going in and she just follows. And then they're in a classroom. It's a bunch of older people and her. And then Kristen Stewart walks in. And she's a teacher. And she's teaching educational law.
And I didn't even know that was a field. My
teacher.
Neither did she.
But boy, is she teaching it. And it's all like when she walks in first, she's like, oh, should we go around and introduce ourselves? And everyone in the class, there's only like 5 people in the class, and everyone in the class except Jamie is like, oh, we all know each other, which I thought was a really strange line. But I guess it makes sense because I think it's being taught in like a public school after hours. Yeah. And so I guess they're all teachers at the school.
So then she teaches? Yeah. Cut to after?
She teaches.
And then Jamie goes up to Kristen Stewart and is like, hi. And then they decide to go to a diner to go eat.
Well, she's like, hi, I'm not registered for the class.
Oh, that's right.
And the teacher's like, okay, why are you here? But then, yeah, they dine together, which is sweet.
Because Kristen Stewart is like, Beth is starving. And she eats like half a burger. And then she tells her that she lives 4 hours away. And so her commute to do this 2 times a week is 8 hours total.
Which is insane.
Insane.
Can you imagine to teach a night class? She says that it like
came down to a clerical error because the two town names sounded similar, which sucks. But yeah, now she has to drive 8 hours a day twice a week,
yes.
Tuesdays and Thursdays. And you can tell that she is fucking out of it. She's exhausted.
Yeah. But Lily Gladstone is all in on it.
Yeah.
She's very excited to talk to someone. So then she continues to go to the classes.
Yeah. This is where I get the gay subtext. They're dying their meal together.
And so every week,
You were going to talk about with the corgi?
Yes. So
my next note is, I thought she was going to run over the damn corgi with her ATV.
Exactly.
She drives this ATV around the farmland, and the corgi trots beside it, but gets dangerously close to the wheels multiple times. And I was
he nips at the wheel.
I was so prepared to watch it die. I was
there's a point where she drives off screen, and I literally thought we were gonna hear like dog cry.
Me too.
I was so scared. I'm glad she did not kill the cute corgi. Yeah. That was my only issue with the corgi. Not the corgi itself, just its proximity to the vehicle.
Although, that would have been a more, exciting plot, but I'm very glad it didn't happen. Because it would have been devastating. Because the corgi's so cute.
It's so cute. It's okay, sorry, Josh. Continue.
Where was I?
Corgi. So corgi. She... more vignette footage...
She goes back to the class.
Uh-huh.
And they continue to go eat.
Yeah.
It's mainly just her talking, Kristen Stewart talking, and Lily Gladstone listening. Mm-hmm. And not really.
And nodding.
Yeah. Not eating.
I'm her.
She looks enamored. And not eating.
Kristen Stewart and not getting the hint.
One of the times, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but one of the times they were in the diner, I think Albert was sitting eating.
Oh, I did not know
it was
that.
Definitely an old man, but I think it was Albert, which would with that
probably
idea of them being connected by that thin connection. But yeah, I made a note of that. I'm not 100% sure, but I mean, all old white men look the same to me. But
I mean, to all of us, really.
I think it was. That would make sense.
And then
yeah, I didn't even think about that.
That just continues. And then one day. Jamie is feeling a little frisky. Instead of taking her car, she finds another way to get to the school.
Uh-huh.
She surprises Kristen Stewart at the end. She tells her to stay right there. I'll be right back with our ride to the diner.
Uh-huh.
And she comes back on a horse.
Which is totally keeping in theme with the horse motif in the podcast. This is
that's what I was going to say.
This is the third film in a row to feature a horse.
Anyways... So, horsey, diner,
The waitress comes up. I'm sorry. I thought this was funny. The waitress comes up and was like, "Is that your horse in the back?" And she's like, "Yeah."
She's like, "Can you feed it, please?
Can I give it some water?"
Yeah. Is that? Do you think that's what Montana's like? I would give it
food. Yes.
I hope so.
Okay, so this ends up being their last like diner date, right? If I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think that there's the subtext I was picking up on during the horse episode is like, I was just getting these vibes from Kristen Stewart that she's just not interested in this girl. Mm-hmm. And that she is, it's that thing of like when someone's being really nice to you and you want to be nice back, but then they're just really pushing really hard. And the plus the fact that she has to drive 8 hours every day, you can just see like the lack of interest on her face. But she is genuinely moved by the horse because at some other point in their diner experience, Kristen Stewart talks about how she used to ride horses, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or how she used to like break horses in or something. So it's like a cute little surprise. But
yes,
this is the moment where I was like, oh, this probably isn't going to have a happy ending.
And no Michelle Williams movie will have a happy ending from what I see.
It's true.
So, yeah, last meeting, and I kind of felt like it would be while we were watching it. Yeah,
because she rides the horse back to the teacher's car and then just watches her drive off, and it holds for, like, 1 second too long that I was like, okay, this is the last time she's going to see her.
She goes into the class for the next time.
Uh-huh.
And instead of Kristen Stewart, it's a man walks in, he sits down, and then when everyone's in, he just gets up and starts teaching. And then she gets up and is like, I'm leaving. She gets in her truck, and then she just drives the 4 hours to Kristen Stewart.
Well, I wanted to say that the teacher, when he stands up, he's like, guess this bitch didn't want to drive here anymore, so now I'm your teacher or whatever. He like has to backhand her.
She talks about it. When they're at the diner, she's like, oh, I'm asking for them to find a replacement for me because this drive is just terrible and I can't do it anymore. But she does not notify, what was her name?
Jamie,
when it happens. So yeah, she gets out and walks out because she's like, I am not a lawyer. I don't understand any of this. And my strap teacher isn't here. She literally zero appeal.
Thank you for calling her that. That's You're exactly welcome. What she is.
She's also a lawyer. I don't know if we said that. This is just like a after hours gig teaching, but she's a full like lawyer. She works at a law firm.
Yeah, I said she was a commie teacher, so sorry. That's on
Which me. Is very impressive because I think she says she's 25.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good for
yeah.
her.
So she drives the 4 hours all the way to Livingston.
No idea.
Because at first I thought she was just, like, driving around town. And then I was like, oh, she's been driving for a really long time. And then she ends up in an entirely different city. And I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes to all the local law firms
mm-hmm.
to see where Kristen Stewart is. Uh-huh. And she walks in to one of them. She talks to the receptionist. And then Miss Laura Dern walks in.
Yes.
With her dog.
Yes. With her dog. And she just goes upstairs.
So that's another connection between the stories.
To have Laura Dern pass again, me in a law office happens. With her dog.
And she looks fantastic. I wanted to
was
say
that
this.
Her real dog?
Oh.
Because doesn't she have a dog that looks
I
like
I think
that?
So. And I think that in the spirit of Kelly Reichardt, that would be a decision that would be highly encouraged. Like, bring your own dog.
I tried
dog.
To find stuff on it and I couldn't. Oh. Doesn't but she I, have a husky? I had a feeling.
We can make it up. We can say that it was.
She has multiple dogs.
Oh. Jamie finds another law firm?
No, I think it's this. Well, the receptionist at Laura's law firm is the first person who is actually helpful, and she makes calls around. She's like, does anyone know a firm that has Elizabeth Travis? And, eventually she gets an address to this place on the other side of town.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And she drives there, and she arrives to the parking lot, and then the paths cross. And I wrote that she says that she went because she knew that she wouldn't see her again if she didn't.
Yeah.
Which is, like, so heartbreaking.
But, again, like, the vibes in this conversation are so
like
one-sided and awkward that it was kind of difficult to watch. because Kristen Stewart is like in full Kristen Stewart mode. She's like, oh, you drove all the way here just to see me? And yeah, it's also like they're standing
to have her talk to
they're me standing like outside in the cold, and you can tell that it's cold from the way Kristen Stewart's acting, which is a brilliant acting move. But like, she's like, without saying it, I was like, Kristen Stewart wants to get out of this conversation so she can go inside because it's so fucking cold out.
So obviously this conversation does not go well.
No.
And so Jamie gets back in her car to go back to wherever she's from. I can't remember. Something Montana.
Like Billings?
Bellevue?
Belgium?
Whatever.
Belmont?
Buttfuck nowhere, in Montana.
Yes. In the gigantic state of Montana.
Yes. In her little horse farm. Yeah. She goes back. And on her way there, the last thing we see of her, she... I'm sure this has something more symbolic to it than just this, but mm-hmm. she kind of falls asleep at the wheel mm-hmm. and drives off into an empty field.
Mm-hmm.
And then
that's first of all, it's in the literal sense because she just drove 4 hours there and then is driving 4 hours back on no sleep. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense that she fell asleep. Also, the fact that you can fall asleep at the wheel and just drive off the road and nothing happens because there's nothing on the side of the roads. Because it's Montana. I thought that was fantastic. But also, yeah, it's just because you can tell just her, like, facial expression acting is superb. You can tell how sad she is, like, behind her eyes. But she, like, doesn't know how to convey it.
Yeah.
Because she's so, like, starved of human interaction.
Yeah.
But
great job, Lily.
She was so good. She stole the show. I
love you on the podcast. Lily Gladstone podcast, it wouldn't work because she's not a product.
All those moments where she's in her truck were so, like, I think it has to do with the way it was shot and the cinematography of it. Just, like, this hard close-up of her driving. But, when she goes to meet Kristen Stewart, I, like, felt like she was, like, getting herself cute to go meet her, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Just little things that she did. And for this to be her first film, wow.
The end of the movie, we check back up with Laura. Mm-hmm. She visits Fuller in prison. They share a milkshake. He's still harassing her for not writing letters to him. Michelle Williams. Well, what's her name?
I want to say about Laura. First of all, she brings him, like, food. And he says, oh, did you bring me a milkshake? Which is presumptive and rude. But she says, yes, chocolate or vanilla. She bought both and she just gave him whichever one he wanted and then took the other one. Again, this is her being too nice to this sociopath. But she's just such a good person. And then also the Fuller talks about how his wife left him for another prisoner.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like... comically tragic, but
yes,
honestly this guy deserves it. He seems like a real bummer.
And then Michelle, all I have is, has her dumb stones and a cigarette.
That's pretty much all it is.
She looks at her stones.
I put she sits and drinks wine and reflects.
Oh, that's right, it's the barbecue.
So I didn't really know how to summarize the end of this, but I think that Ella Taylor she wrote an essay about this movie for Criterion. I think she sums it up really well. So I'm going to just read what.
Well, we go back to Jamie one more time also, but she doesn't really, it's just her like feeding the horses again. I said, she's tending to the horses again. Please come up with something else. And that's the last note I have.
I mean, that's her life. She can't.
Yeah.
Ella Taylor, Criterion contributor, says, in a kind of epilogue at the end of Certain Women, you couldn't call it closure. Reichardt returns us briefly to each of the three women. They're all still alone in one way or another, and we see them all engaged in feeding others. Have they experienced noble failure, despair, or hope for a bolder future? Whichever it is, Reichardt has turned the characters inside out for us. We've accompanied these uncertain women through something momentous. You can imagine your own ending or agree that life is like that, only less so.
I got chills.
Yeah. So, in summary, the women were certain.
Yes.
So, premiere at Sundance had good critical reception. I have a quote from Empire that calls it a languid, leisurely paced drama. Not much happens, but Reichardt's light touch and the performances of the leads make it soar. I also have a quote from Laura about the movie, if we are interested.
Yes, yes, yes.
Please.
The interviewer asked her, through filming, what feels like a vignette with this character or a short story, what did you discover? Get ready for the wisdom.
Okay.
I love her. Ugh. She said, I think for me as an actor, the greatest opportunity and therefore challenge was how quiet this person's struggle is. And in a way, how quiet her shame is about who she hasn't been. Here's a woman who hasn't been considered in her life in the way that she deserves, hasn't been listened to in her life the way that she deserves, and that's spoken to really beautifully. But at the same time, when given this position of authority, she isn't considering the pain of the client. She becomes fatigued by him and his issues, his pain, all of it. She tries to make it go away to the best she can.
Wow.
Profound. She also, in the same interview, this was with Deadline, I think, she talks about how, like, women and their stories are always silenced, and how this was in 2016, so it got, she also does a political biopic this year, or something similar. Hold on.
Laura Dern?
Yes. But it's like a TV biopic. No, in 2016, she does something called The Founder.
Oh,
have you guys heard of that? The McDonald's one? Okay. And Michael Keaton?
I didn't even know she was in that.
She's in that. I think the guy's a misogynist or something.
Oh, I'm sure. It's Michael Keaton.
But she was saying that in both roles that she did that year, that the film was about, like, the struggle of being a woman, and how, since it's an election year, like, it's more, like, amplifying those voices is really important, and that women need to be heard. So it's nice to see her get political again.
Yay.
We love political Laura.
We're just waiting on her to okay the revolution.
Yeah. I have two fun facts from IMDb.
Okay.
Ooh.
So originally in the short stories, Jamie's character was a man. And Maylee Malloy, she didn't know that Kelly was going to flip the gender of the rancher until she actually saw the screening.
Oh.
Hope she's not homophobic. Yeah. Okay, good.
She loved it.
Can you imagine how much charm it would lose if it was two certain women and one rancher man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't roll off the tongue as well.
I would hate it. My last fact.
And we wouldn't have gotten Lily Gladstone. So.
That's true. The best part of this movie.
Yep.
My last fact for this episode. Laura Dern played a character from Montana in Jurassic Park and frequently works with Montana-born filmmaker David Lynch.
I was going to say that. Because do you know if this movie was filmed on location? I'm assuming it was filmed in Montana. Was.
Yeah.
Do you think that she, like, called... I had this, like, vision of her, like, calling David Lynch and being like, hey, I'm in blah, blah, blah. Do you have anywhere that I can eat? And he'd be like...
Argh, I blah, hope blah, so. Blah.
I'm sure that happened. They're good friends. I'm sure it did. And also, how many people in the film industry are from Montana? He's probably, like, the only contact.
I'm sure that they speak a lot if she has a cappuccino machine in her house for him. In terms of nominations, they won two. One for the Alliance of Women Film Journalists and one for Boston Society of Film Critics, both for... one for Kelly Reichardt, one for Lily Gladstone. They got two ISA nominations, but they did not win, but they were also for Kelly Reichardt and Lily Gladstone. They won at the London Film Festival. I think that was, the whole cast or the film. Lily won at the Los Angeles Film Critics Association. And she got second place at the National Society of Film Critics. And she won Breakthrough Artist for the San Diego Film Critics Society. So, yay, Lily.
I'm going to go, as soon as we stop recording, I'm going to go back and look at the Oscar nominations and think about how many people she deserved to be above.
All right. Next week, Big Little Lies. We've been waiting for this all season to talk about Renata. And it's here. Like, Renata, Klein.
If there's anyone who hasn't seen Big Little Lies, I will Venmo you $10. Like, it was such a cultural event, I felt.
Honestly, I've been rewatching it, and I'm like, if this came out now, it would not be as good.
What do you mean? I think part of it definitely was the hype, like, and just how everyone was talking about it.
Like, if a show about, like, five rich, or whatever, four rich white women living in the Pacific Northwest with only the worries of fraud and cheating.
Right.
Well, I guess domestic abuse.
Well, that's a bad thing. Kind of what I thought was appealing about it was being able to watch these people with such insignificant problems, like worry constantly in like these beautiful. I thought that was kind of what it made like your problems go away for a little bit, because you were like, oh, this bitch is scared because her daughter's getting bullied at school. Stupid.
Okay.
But we'll talk about it.
Spoiled Big Little Lies season one.
We'll get into it. I'm so sorry, but I really, really, everyone has seen it. Right?
This is true.
Like, do you guys know anyone who hasn't seen Big Little Lies?
My brother.
Get him to watch before next week. But yeah, that's coming next week. We're doing season one and season two in distinct episodes. So season one's next week. I'm excited.
Me too.
We get to talk about Nicole Kidman, which is something that I've always wanted to do on this podcast.
Oh my god. That didn't even hit me.
We already talked about Reese Witherspoon.
Shailene
Woodley. Love her.
Oh my god. Oh my god. Next week. Be there, be square.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.